From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
But J.B. Pritzker found it okay, acceptable, to sign this legislation and put into law that a teenager can walk into an abortion clinic and get an abortion without their parent being notified. That's a porn. And I think Let me finish. But I'm not going to fall into the trap of J.B. Pritzker. You know, I'm not going to fall into the trap of J.B. Pritzker talking about what he thinks we should be talking about in this campaign. We need to be talking about his failures as governor. I'm running for governor of the state of Illinois, and I want to compare my record to J.B. Pritzker's record.
That's a Republican candidate for Governor Richard Ervin. A difficult news conference this week, and it happened as a poll shows the race might be a bit tighter than some believe. We'll talk about that and more on this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, Dan Petrella. He covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. And Dan, it's always good to have you on with us. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here. Thanks.
So Hannah, who I know you're under the weather, but we appreciate you being on with us too. I want to start off by talking a little bit about that news conference that happened this week. It was in Aurora, where Richard Ervin is the mayor. Didn't go as planned as far as the Ervin campaign was concerned.
That is probably an understatement. Richard Ervin has been, has definitely the most tightly controlled campaign in the governor's race. And honestly, one of the most tightly controlled campaigns I've seen. It's obviously, as we've talked about many times, he and the rest of the five on the slate of statewide candidates are being bankrolled by Ken Griffin, the conservative mega donor. You know, Richard Ervin has not really done much with the press. You know, he did a couple of one-on-one interviews, but really this is the first time that he's had a press conference. And he called it to talk about the pretty damning audit that we talked about last week about the fatal COVID outbreak at the LaSalle Veterans Home in November of 2020 that, you know, eventually killed 36 veterans. Potent topic, obviously. He seemed to be just caught off guard by all of the off-topic questions. As you said, he is mayor. He's been, you know, in public service for a while now. You know, certainly he knows how to interact with the press, but it did not go well. You know, there was persistent questions about what is his stance on, you know, abortion exceptions. You know, he did say, which he said before, I believe, you know, like he believes in the exceptions for the health and safety of the mother and, you know, in cases of rape and incest, but he still refused to comment on the leaked draft opinion from the Supreme Court last week that would overturn Roe. You know, he's asked again about whether or not he voted for Donald Trump in 2016 or 2020. You know, he was asked about a number of things, and he did not have an easy time answering any of those questions or trying to, you know, kind of swing back to what he wanted to talk about. And it was a lot of, let me finish, like we heard up top.
Well, Dan, did we learn anything from it? I know there were a lot of questions being thrown at him there, off-topic questions from what the news conference was about. Was anything gleaned from that?
No, not really. I mean, I think what we learned was that he is going to try as hard as he can to stay on message and not answer questions, try to deflect, try to say that things that really are concerns of Republican primary voters are concerns that J.B. Pritzker wants the media to be focusing on, and just not really answering the question. And, it, you know, it occurs to me that by trying to deflect and, you know, filibuster was the term I think that my Tribune colleague Rick Pearson used in his story about the press conference, is just he didn't leave any time for any questions people might have had on topic, because you know, it devolved into this sparring match with him and reporters, because he wouldn't answer questions about his voting record, where he's, you know, attacking other candidates in the GOP primary for supposedly having backed Joe Biden or Barack Obama in previous elections. And yet he won't say whether or not he voted for Donald Trump in the 2020 election, or whether he would vote for Donald Trump if he's the GOP nominee in 2024. You know, it was reminiscent in some ways of Bruce Rauner, who he's drawn many comparisons to, who went to great lengths to avoid ever talking about Donald Trump, even when he was in the White House while Rauner was in the governor's office.
Well, Charlie, you made a point last week, and I think I thought it was spot on, is that he's in a bit of a tough spot here in this Republican primary, because he doesn't want to come across as doing too much here or saying too much to try to cater to the more far right voters. So he's, you know, doesn't want to do something that could hurt him in a general election. So being vague or trying to evade in some cases answering these questions, that's really probably his strategy as we would have another 6 weeks or so before the election.
Yeah, I think it is a strategy, but I look at that news conference as being kind of a disaster. And it shows to me that his handlers didn't do a very good job of getting their guy ready, because the questions that were asked were so obvious that you're going to hear about this. And he got flustered when he was asked about it. And the longstanding rule, going back at least in my experience, 50 plus years, is that when candidate A calls a news conference to talk about subject A, we, the press, show up and we listen to candidate A rattle on for however long he wants to. We maybe ask a question or two about subject A. And then the other part of the bargain is candidate A has to stand there and take questions from the press about whatever the press thinks its audience wants to know about. And apparently the handlers didn't convince Richard Ervin that this is the way it goes. And so instead of getting kind of soft stories where the Republican candidate blasts J.B. Pritzker for being a horrible administrator, you get stories that, let me quote from a couple of them. Here's Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. And the headline says, GOP candidate for Governor Richard Ervin holds a news conference, but dances around questions on abortion and Trump. And the lead says, Republican candidate for Governor Richard Ervin met with the media Monday for only the second time since announcing his candidacy, but deflected questions of likely interest to voters that range from his past presidential votes and the prospect of another presidential bid by Donald Trump to whether Roe v. Wade should be overturned. Instead, the Aurora mayor used a news conference at his suburban campaign headquarters to filibuster and repeat talking points from his infrequent public appearances, while contending reporters were following a script set by Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker. And here's what Dave McKinney on WBEZ said. The fundraising frontrunner among Republicans in the Illinois governor's race repeatedly dodged questions Monday about his stance on a possible national abortion ban and whether he voted for former President Donald Trump or would support him for re-election in 2024. In a rare appearance before reporters, Aurora Mayor Richard Ervin obfuscated on what undoubtedly are red meat issues for a sizable swath of anti-abortion, pro-Trump Republican primary voters, giving rivals in the June 28th primary an opening for renewed attacks. And probably the best of all was the Sun-Times, my alma mater, that on its front page had a picture of Richard Ervin, and the caption on the picture is Deflection Day, ? I thought it was pretty much a disaster. And as I say, it goes back on his handlers. He should have been better prepared, in my judgment, because those questions were going to come up. He knew they were going to come up. It seemed like he was flustered. You know, let me finish. If he does that in a debate, assuming that he ever agrees to debate, he's going to look really, really bad.
Well, Trump is certainly still a red-hot issue in most Republican primaries. Do you back Donald Trump or not? And does Donald Trump back you? Well, so far he has made no endorsement in this Republican primary for governor. But Dan, I'm sure that Ervin is trying to avoid getting Trump involved in this race as well by saying something that could irritate the former president, because Darren Bailey has actively been courting his endorsement.
That's right. Bailey went down to Mar-a-Lago with Congresswoman Mary Miller, within the past couple of weeks, is trying to get the former president to endorse him. And then sort of the trick box that Richard Ervin is in is that, you know, that would, well, that would be maybe a great thing for voters in the June 28th Republican primary. It would be, kryptonite or something like that when you think about trying to win back over some moderate to, you know, right-leaning, particularly suburban voters who may be moved into the Democrats column in the last election because of their distaste for the former president. I think Trump coming to Illinois to endorse Bailey may do well for him in a GOP primary, but I don't think it would benefit him very much in the suburbs, which is really going to be the battleground for the gubernatorial election in the fall.
And Hannah, I mentioned at the start of the show, there was a new poll out this week, shed a little bit of light maybe on where voters stand at this point when it comes to the Republican primary election for governor. Give us the overview of that. And is this race seem to be somewhat tight right now?
You know, we've seen a couple of different polls in the last, I don't know, a few weeks, I guess. They each, though, have their limitations. This week is from WGN-TV in partnership with The Hill in D.C. and Emerson College polling. And it showed, you know, I guess you could say a tightening, but like I said, these polls all have had their limitations. I think the last one we saw, Ervin had pulled ahead of Darren Bailey, who, by the way, you know, he's been... He has the name recognition because he's been out there for more than 2 years now, publicly fighting, defying Governor Pritzker's COVID restrictions, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, and you know, suing and all of that. But this poll showed Ervin still leading with about 24% of the vote, potential vote, I should say. Bailey following with about 20% of the vote. Gary Rabin with like 8%, Jesse Sullivan, 7%, then the other two, Max Salomon and Paul Schimpf, not doing so well. But, the important thing to about this poll, I would say, is that 37% of respondents said they're still undecided. And so, you know, it's going to matter what these candidates do in their closing statements. Like Charlie alluded to earlier, they're not gonna, at least at this point, there's not going to be a debate that features all of the Republican candidates. There is a fight going on between NBC and WGN stations in Chicago about a debate a few weeks from now. It's a real shame that we're not going to see all of these candidates all on one stage going head to head. As we've talked about before, so much of especially high level campaigns these days are waged through paid media, and that's certainly been the case in this Republican primary. It's not just Ervin, who's of course being bankrolled by Ken Griffin, but almost all of the candidates, at least the top four, have had ads up on TV, on radio. And it's just, it's not been a very normal campaign. We'll see. Again, the 37% of those who said that they're undecided, they could go any which way.
In that poll, the margin of error was 3%. And so what that means is that Richard Ervin's 24% of these potential Republican voters in the primary who were polled, his 24% could be as high as 27% or as low as 21%. Darren Bailey's roughly 20% could be as high as 23% or as low as 17%. So if you look at the extremes in the margin, it's possible that Ervin is ahead by 10 points or that Bailey is actually ahead by a couple. And so it really is still a horse race. And what I found really interesting, one of the questions that was asked of the respondents was, if Donald Trump endorsed a candidate, would that make you more or less likely to vote for that candidate? 57% said that would make it more likely. 24%, doesn't make a difference. 19%, that would make it less likely that I'd vote for him. So in my mind, what this suggests is that if Darren Bailey should get the nod from Donald Trump, he could very well win this thing. And, well, and another thing that I find interesting is this is going to be the first time we've had a primary in June for many, many years. The last one was 1968. And you wonder what's the turnout going to be in the summer when people are on vacation, when people are busy doing other things and have a lot of other, what would you say, things on their mind. Now, we have early voting, which we did not have in 68. And in 68, which was a presidential year, the turnout was 29%. 2 years earlier, in a non-presidential year, it was 37% in 66. And since, well, in 1970, then we went to a March primary, and it's been that way ever since, with the exception of one February one that was intended to boost Barack Obama's presidential hopes. But I think in my mind, that's a big question mark. What kind of a turnout are we going to get? And the other thing that could really be a game changer, as I mentioned earlier, is if in fact Donald Trump does endorse Darren Bailey.
So we will continue to watch that. And you are listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Dan Petrella of the Chicago Tribune. Let me switch gears now to something else that came out this week. More bad news for the Pritzker administration, although quite systemic with the agency that we're talking about. A state audit was released regarding the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the state's child welfare agency. Dan, you reported on this. What were the findings? What did you take away from it?
I guess the high level finding is that the agency at the time of this audit, which was in calendar year 2020, was having all sorts of issues with tracking the kind of services it was required to be providing to children in its care, from routine medical exams, vaccinations, to whether home safety checks were being conducted when kids were returned to their parents after being in the care of the state, to documenting the aftercare plans that are supposed to be done once children go back to their homes, to make sure that families are getting the support services they need to try to keep the family together, and that bad situations don't occur again. The DCFS, as you mentioned, has had all sorts of problems over the years. It's frequently referred, running the agency is frequently referred to as the hardest job in state government. But what struck me was just that the agency, kind of took issue with the way the audit was conducted and sort of blamed the Auditor General a little bit for looking at, outdated information or not looking at other records that sort of backed up that they did keep track of these things that they were supposed to. But someone from the ACLU who we spoke to brought up the fact that if the auditors can't find this information, how are the frontline staff supposed to track it down so they know what's going on with the families who they're supposed to be helping, and particularly the children who they're supposed to be protecting?
Yeah, Charlie, you looked at this as I mentioned, systemic. This has been a problem across all of state government, really, and a lot of it goes back to these antiquated computer systems.
Yeah, that was one of the things that stood out to me. There were a couple instances where the auditor said, well, we checked basically the computer system that's supposed to keep track of all this, of each individual child and what's being done for that child, and we couldn't find the data. And then on a couple of occasions, DCFS said, well, here's the paper records. We have it all down, but it didn't get in the system. It's been a problem with agencies. I guess in some respects, state government, in terms of its cyber infrastructure, in some agencies it's still back there in the days of dial-up modems, trying to keep track of these kids. This is just like at the Department of Veterans Affairs, where the on-ground people didn't do what they were supposed to, and here the on-ground people aren't really plugged in, if you will, to an overall system that can keep track of, did Charlie Wheeler, this little foster child, did he get his immunizations? Did he get his hearing tested? Did he get his eyes tested? Did he get his teeth cleaned? All the things that in theory and in law are supposed to be part of the package to help this child develop into a, what would you say, a healthy individual. The department can't seem to keep track of them. And this has been a problem. We mentioned earlier the consent decree that they're working under. That goes back, I believe, to 1988. So it's been an ongoing battle. There's been this century, there's been like 14 different directors. The department seems to change directors the way some people change their socks. And it's, I don't know what really needs to be done. One of the things that also struck me is the fact that the headcount of the people who are employed at this, well, at the time this audit came out, was roughly half the number of people that the agency is authorized to have under kind of its organizational structure. These are the how many people we need for field workers. These are how many people we need on the management end back in the office. And they're just really understaffed. Governor Pritzker has put a lot of money and they've done some hiring, but they still are trying to address these longstanding issues. And I don't see any progress, any real progress for a while yet.
Hannah, we just talked last week about an audit that was, as you mentioned earlier, critical of how the administration handled the LaSalle Veterans Home. Certainly, this issue with DCFS, like was said there, it goes back really decades as being a problem. But does any of this become a problem for J.B. Pritzker in an election year?
I mean, DCFS in general has been a problem for him. You know, already, you know, his Republican opponents or those who hope to face him in the general election, they've made it an issue. This audit in particular, honestly, it's not at the level of the LaSalle audit that we talked about this week, may not be to the level of the audit that we see out of the unemployment system that's also due out. That will undoubtedly be more bad news for Pritzker. But, you know, aside from the findings of the audit, it's just the repeated issues with DCFS. And yes, this goes back decades. This agency it's just had inconsistent leadership. It is a very tough job. COVID did not make the already difficult jobs here any easier. Just things keep happening. And when you're governor, the buck stops with you, or at least it's supposed to. And just yesterday after this audit came out, DCFS Director Mark Smith was held in contempt of court in Cook County for the 10th time this calendar year. It's only mid-May, and this is for the agency's failure to find appropriate placements for youth in care who are, you know, trying to find residential beds or shelter beds for these kids. Obviously, you know, these are beds that we lost about 500 of these beds during the budget impasse. And it's very difficult actually to build up the capacity again. You know, the governor has repeatedly said that he stands behind Mark Smith and basically said, we have to trust the process. We are investing more into child welfare year over year. And, you know, obviously it's hard to turn around something so large. There's a lot standing in the way. Yeah, it's going to be an issue, especially when you talk about folks like veterans. You know, last week I said they're kind of like a third rail population, and when they're not being treated with the utmost, it's going to be a problem for folks. This is the same type of thing. You know, these children are the most vulnerable among our population. The governor's always talking about how the state is supposed to be protecting the most vulnerable. Well, you know, these are issues in which, you know, the government did not.
Yeah, just a few seconds left here. But Dan, since you've been following this, I'll give you the last word on it. Do you think that this is going to be an issue? We know it's going to be an issue. Will it be a problem for the governor in this campaign?
You know, it's one of many things I think voters will have to weigh. And it strikes me, as Hannah was saying, you know, there have been calls from opponents to fire Mark Smith. But does that just perpetuate the problem if you fire yet another director of DCFS? So I think it bears, you know, time to see whether if Pritzker does win another term, if there are improvements in the agency, or if, you know, 2 or 3 years from now under a potential second Pritzker administration, we're still talking about some of these same problems at DCFS.
Okay, let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, it was announced that Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman from the 4th District, which is basically central Illinois and part south, is going to leave her position. She's going to resign. And in an historic first, her replacement will be an appellate justice in the 4th District, Lisa Holder White, who would be the first Black woman to serve on the state's high court. Holder White is a Republican. She'll be sworn in on July 8th. And because this is going to be after the primary, she will hold that appointment until the 2024 election, when a full-time replacement will be chosen. And in my mind, this is very historic. The fact that now we will have a Black woman on the high court, finally. And I think it's something that that should be noted. And as an aside, kind of the protocol is that if I'm a Supreme Court justice and I resign, I basically get to choose who's going to replace me, and then the full court goes along with my selection. That's happened many times in the past, and I'm sure it will continue in the future.
Also should mention from Central Illinois News, Republican Congressman, former Congressman Tim Johnson died this week. He spent 12 years in Congress, and before that was a state lawmaker. Quite a character, and really an interesting fellow to get to know. Hannah?
Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a bill that had been negotiated throughout the spring by retailers and the Attorney General's office. It creates a new classification of crime called organized retail theft. And one of those lawmakers in the Black Caucus who was kind of integral to negotiating this was Cam Buckner, a state representative from Chicago South Side, who yesterday announced formally that he is running for Chicago mayor in 2023.
And Dan?
I wanted to take a second just to give kudos to my Tribune colleague, Jennifer Smith Richards, and Jody Cohen of ProPublica, who recently published a story on the practice of school districts across the state using police to issue tickets to students for disciplinary infractions. There have already been some direction out from the State Board of Education for schools to curtail that practice. And now today, Comptroller Susana Mendoza's office has said that they are going to stop allowing municipalities to collect debt for truancy tickets through a program in her office that would allow municipalities to sort of garnish people's tax refunds and other state checks to recoup that debt. So just some good impact from some really powerful reporting from my colleagues.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Dan Petrella from the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week. Join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.